Okay, and welcome to another episode of Pelvic Pain Natters. And I'm the host today, Tim Beams. I'm a pain specialist, physiotherapist, and co-founder of Pelvic Pain Matters. And I'm joined by Carl Monahan, who is a specialist in male pelvic pain and founder of Pelvic Pain Matters. So today we were thinking about, and this relates to our practice over the last week or two with patients, we're thinking about the role of diagnoses. And in particular, we have a couple of different thoughts around diagnoses, you know, the merits of diagnoses, perhaps the worry that a diagnosis can instill in someone. And I thought I'd just kick off because it's sort of current in my mind is that it's really common to seek a diagnosis, first of all. You know, if you are in pain, you want to know why am I in pain? You know, what's going on in me? You know, or what's wrong with me? So I think the first thing to say is that if you are feeling like you want to find out what's wrong and you seek that diagnosis, then that's absolutely a normal thing to do. I think most of us, if you are living in a westernized society, then there are certain standards that healthcare holds. One of them being that there is adequate healthcare available to all, and from a pain perspective, it's also the ability to be able to access clinicians who have specialist knowledge in healthcare and the resources to be able to treat those conditions as well. So, you know, it's only fair that you have some a wish, but within the society, there is a need for us to be able to provide that as well. So that I just wanted to put that in there as a runner, because actually, what we often find with diagnosis, and I think this is really quite typical, sadly, with male pelvic pain, is that a diagnosis can be offered that is confusing. That can create some worry and some fear around it, and yeah, that's where I wanted us to sort of discuss a little bit at the moment. And if we even just thinking about the role of bacterial infection, for instance, in pelvic pain, is such a common thing you hear about, isn't it? I would imagine. Certainly weekly, if not daily, you hear this. Well, Carl, just give us your sort of first things that leap to mind as we start this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. And you're absolutely spot on. Anyone who's going through this wants to know what the hell is going on. What is going on? And we can turn to the internet, we can turn to Dr. Google, but that in isolation is pretty treacherous to try and navigate. So we turn to a healthcare professional to try and get maybe some testing, but certainly an idea as to what's going on and then how that can subsequently be treated. The role of bacteria is going to come up for decades and decades and decades and decades with this. I definitely had a bacterial infection when my pelvic pain began. That was very clear and obvious. But once the infection passed, my symptoms were still presenting with what felt like a bacterial infection. That's confusing. That's really, really unsettling. And with something like a company called, and I'm sure many of the listeners will know this company or be aware of them, but companies like MicroGen DX, which are now doing much, much more sensitive testing, and often bacteria that under let's well, we're in the UK, right? So under UK testing methods would not pick up bacteria. They're making their test much more sensitive, so they are more likely to pick up bacteria on examination or testing, but it's just added more fuel to the fire because it adds much, much more uncertainty for so many men that are going through this. Do I now go and fork out for this much more comprehensive, extensive testing and send my sample off to, I think it's Denver in the States, anyway, it's in America, and get someone else to to assess that for me. And then what does that mean? If that comes back positive or negative, now where do I stand? So there's so much uncertainty that gets thrown up from this condition and at diagnosis. Like, is it, for example, simply, is it bacterial or non-bacterial? And that can be a massive hurdle for any future treatment as well, can't it?
Absolutely, yeah, and the sensitivity of the tests mean that, as you're quite rightly saying, is that you can pick things up and therefore you have a positive test, but if you don't pick something up, it doesn't mean it's a negative test, and that is confusing, isn't it? I mean, in itself, that's like, oh wow, where do we go with that? I wanted to say, because people aren't necessarily aware of these things. But what we run with, in again, it's a westernized medical perspective, is we run our medical knowledge based on a what we would call a biomedical approach. And a biomedical approach is very intuitive, that you're looking for the source, if you want, the problem, and then you're looking for ways to fix that. So if it's an infection in a particular bacteria, then you have a targeted approach specific to, or maybe not so specific, maybe a bit broader, to target the presence of that bacteria. Now that is brilliant in an acute situation. But when we start looking at things that have been around for a lot longer, as you gave as an example of yourself, then that sort of targeted approach where you're looking for a source of a problem becomes in itself problematic, because it's not as easy to identify one thing or even several things that might reasonably be able to cause the symptoms that you're experiencing. So what we find in pain, and particularly for persistent problems, something that's going on a long period of time, is we probably need to actually follow a slightly different framework, a slightly different model. And that doesn't mean abandon the great stuff in a biomedical approach. It means that we need to look at the person as a whole. So I just wanted to drop that in there, because I'm a big believer that and I see what I see is I see people in pain. This is what I work with all day, all week. I talk about it. How sad is that? but I do want people to realize that there are merits and problems as well, and we can never be perfect, can we? And one of the things that come from the when stuff starts lasting, you start hearing something become called chronic, and that can be in itself quite problematic as well as a diagnosis. What are you thinking when I say chronic? Was
It's a word that just it sends shivers up and down my spine, and not in a good way. I try and choose my words carefully, and chronic has certain connotations to it, doesn't it? And I've spoken about this quite a lot in the past. I think it can lead a patient to feeling worse, certainly not better, if they're given a diagnosis of something that's chronic prostatitis or chronic pelvic pain syndrome. I think it can be, misleading at best. And it often means, or it's often assumed that it means it's a lifelong condition that someone's going to have as well. It means it's more likely to be more complex, and I prefer the word complex. So complex prostatitis or complex pelvic pain syndrome. I'm just being a stickler for the use of words, but yeah, it's not nice. It's not a nice term to hear. There's all kind of connotations and associations with it, and if you're feeling bad about things already as a patient with these symptoms, and then you're given a diagnosis of the C word, then that can be even further damaging.
Yeah. And it's tough then as well, isn't it? Because you're saying, look, there isn't a very specific thing that we can identify. It's more complex, as you're saying. I prefer the word complex as well. And by becoming more complex, that's also a little confusing. And that brings in uncertainty. And then with uncertainty, inevitably for some of us, then that's scary as well. Does that mean I can get better? What's the chances of this continuing for the rest of my life, as you said. So yeah, there are sort of problems then, aren't there, from a diagnostic point of view. If you look at the pain literature, and people do this and they look to say, what role does receiving a diagnosis have for someone? You typically see sort of two camps, and one camp is that someone receives a diagnosis and they it really helps them. They feel reassured. Then it creates some confidence around how they can go and manage themselves and create that opportunity for recovery. And then we see another camp, and the other camp are the people doing the exact opposite, and they hear a diagnosis and it makes them scared, worried, anxious, fearful. And there are some predictors as well within that, in terms of how you are in at the moment of receiving the diagnosis as well. So, if you are going through an incredibly stressful period in your life and then you get this diagnosis, you are more likely to, it doesn't mean you will, but you are more likely to also get worried, anxious, etc., when you receive the diagnosis. So, if you've got healthcare professionals listening in on this call, then be mindful of your role if you are a diagnostician here.
Yeah, I think it, and particularly, it's such an important message there, Tim, isn't it? That what we say can be empowering for someone, but equally, what we say can also be disastrous for someone. The message that we give is so important. And when someone is diagnosed with, for example, okay, I'm really sorry, Mr. Beams, but you've got chronic prostatitis here. This is something you're just going to have to live with. This is going to be something you're going to have for the rest of your life, and it's really difficult to treat. You're just going to have to put up with it and try and avoid stress. There we go. They're often throwaway comments that I hear my patients tell me about some of the messaging they've been given from someone who has diagnosed them with a whatever phrase they've used in that diagnostic conversation. That's quite scary, isn't it?
And I don't know this. Do you know this? Whether there are specific trigger words within pelvic pain that might pull it up, be more maybe predisposed to creating fear and anxiety and worry around diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, just the term itself, I think, because it's so spurious, it's so outdated now, and it is so open to interpretation what that might mean. I think probably if you're already feeling a bit panicked, already feeling a bit uncertain, maybe there's a life event, as you said, that's perhaps going on around you at that time, then you're given not only these symptoms, but you're given a diagnosis. I think it's very easy that lots of words could then be really, really triggering. I'm thinking back to a patient of mine I spoke with on Friday last week. And even, he's at quite an extreme end of the spectrum, but even to the point where we're having a conversation and the doorbell goes and he jumps. So we're having a conversation around his condition, around how he's been experiencing his symptoms and the impact they've had over them, the uncertainty. He's not in a great place. I can see this within him. He's struggling with conversation. His partner's on the call with me as well. And he's trying to say something, but he's getting very overwhelmed. He's trying to put into words how he's feeling, but so much of it is all coming up at the same time. I could really see how he's triggered. His health anxiety has gone through the roof since having had this condition as well. And it can become a bit like a snowball effect where we pick up other things that can make us feel even more uncertain with even more shaky ground around us as well. So, yeah, I think once we reach a tipping point, I think any information we receive, even if we're looking for good stories and recovery stories on a forum like Reddit, your mind will be taking in all kinds of other information. You may be reading certain things, but actually your system is absorbing all kinds of other information as well. So it's very easy to become very, very easily triggered.
You are an individual. You know what you're experiencing, what you're going through is totally unique for you, and your recovery and what you can do in order to facilitate that will be unique for you as well, although there might be shared things that number of people find beneficial. But yeah, and it's about finding that unique flavor for you, isn't it? I feel like we should summarize, but I'd like to have a positive spin on this. And so I'm going to kick off with one, and then perhaps we can come up with a little a list of some positivity here. The first thing is that you are not wrong for seeking a diagnosis. You know, in no way are you to blame. That is absolutely normal. The right thing to do, you know, go and find out what it is, why it is that I'm experiencing the symptoms that I'm experiencing. I feel like we can do better in that moment then.
Yeah, I would echo that as well. It's really important. If someone comes to me and they're saying, I'm getting these symptoms at the moment, what do you think I should do? How can you treat this? My first response is go and get it checked out. Go to a practitioner, general practitioner or urologist, and make sure you are getting that appointment. Get some diagnostics done, right? It's really, really important that you rule out any medical red flags or medical emergencies, if you like, and you're doing the right thing by doing so. You're absolutely, it might be quite scary. It might be really, really unsettling, but make sure that you go and get that session booked in. Like I said, if you come to me, first of all, I will steer you away from me to go and see someone like a GP or urologist.
And then in those moments, there are simple things that we, as a clinician, I would be trying to create reassurance around the messaging of getting some diagnostics back as well. So what's that actually telling me? You know, there's some really positive news, some really helpful news that we can get from those diagnostic tests as well, can't we? Can we share some of that positivity?
And it's difficult to reframe things sometimes, isn't it? It's difficult to just turn something a little bit on its axis and look at it in a different way. But actually having a negative diagnosis isn't a bad thing, and maybe even having a positive diagnosis also isn't a bad thing. It can lead to a pathway of care. There are incredible therapists and clinicians out there. I would always encourage people to choose wisely where they're perhaps looking for information online. I'm a little bit biased, and Pelvic Pain Matters is a great resource that you could go and check out. Reddit for me is always a bit of an unknown quantity, and you're going to get all kinds of anecdotal evidence on there as well from individuals who've maybe found something they've experienced benefit from, but it may not be the right platform all the time for getting good sound quality information.
And I think if you look in on yourself and you're sort of the person who keeps seeking more and more and more, the more you seek, the more you're going to get. And my experience is that muddies the water even further. And there's needs to be some point where you create a strong enough, confident enough relationship with your practitioner, with your clinician. That means that you're taking the diagnosis or explanation might be a better description of what you're doing, the explanation at face value, and then you're committing to that, you know, what that means to me. Because what I've seen so many and too many times now is that someone receives one diagnosis and a slightly different diagnosis and another diagnosis, and that is not helpful then, is it? It's just so confusing from that. So if you can find the person that you feel safe with, you align well with, you can build a little rapport with, then a suggestion would be that that's something that you should be looking out for when you're receiving those diagnoses.
Absolutely. There are amazing clinicians out there. It may feel like you've come across other clinicians other than what I've just suggested there as well, but there are some incredible people out there that will help and support you and guide you through this process as well.
And if you'd get a diagnosis, then what do we do with it? To my mind, and the problem with pelvic pain is as you've called it, is a waste basket diagnosis, isn't it? CPPS is that, well, we haven't found anything that better explains what it is that you're experiencing. So this is the term that we're going to offer you. Does that guide us then? And what I would say is a diagnosis is something that you then don't just let land on you. It's something that you use to motivate you and guide you into the future. So what, okay, so given that I've received this diagnosis, what can I do about it?
Yeah, that's hugely empowering, isn't it? That's a great way of looking at things, Tim. A really nice reframe there. It's not doom and gloom. It doesn't mean you're going to have this for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy to treat. And the reason I prefer the term complex, and you've echoed that yourself as well, is because it is multifaceted. And it's important to look beyond the biomedical model as the only pathway here. When things do persist beyond a certain length of time. But yeah, absolutely. It's not a life sentence. And that's a really important message for you to hear as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, today we've been thinking about unpacking and hopefully reframing the process of receiving a diagnosis or seeking a diagnosis and receiving a diagnosis. So that's this episode with Pelvic Pain Matters. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.